What's up, Nets fans? Welcome to another episode of the Brooklyn Buzz podcast presented by OTGBasketball.com. Make sure you follow OTG on Twitter at OTGBasketball. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, Mr. Jack Manuel. What's up, Jack?
D'Lo's back, Nick. He's back. I'm super duper excited.
Yes, I am super pumped myself, Jack. And I don't know if you saw, I tweeted out a picture the other day. I used that meme again, but I was missing some D'Lo, especially against the Knicks. But we'll talk Knicks, Nets, Spurs, Nets, a little Allen Crabb, Spencer Dinwiddie, and then we'll end it off with D'Angelo Russell's return. But before we get started, just a reminder, you can listen to Jack and I, Brooklyn Buzz, on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, and OTGBasketball.com. Also, a shout-out to the OTG Podcast Network. Jack and I both have a pod on there, also a couple other pods. Make sure you check that out. But let's get started. Sadly, we're going to talk bad first, and that's Knicks Nets. Another terrible performance against the Knicks. 0-3 on the season, and they just sucked. What were your thoughts on that game?
Nick, when we can't make our 3-point shot, we're just a completely different team. And our percentages aren't that great anyway. So there's just really no versatility to our offense. Spencer Dinwiddie's gone a little bit cold of late, especially in terms of his shooting. Allen Crabb's had his off and on nights, as he always has. You know, we can't rely on guys like Joe Harris to win us games when it comes down to the stretch. We just didn't have the elite talent to sort of keep up with, a more seasoned, more cohesive unit down the road at MSG. New York had Porzingis, got Courtney Lee, Enes Kanter. These guys know how to get the wins. These guys know how to get buckets. Fortunately, we couldn't get it either.
Yeah, exactly. And I think in that, 119-104 loss, like you said, they are a step ahead of us in terms of probably talent and having veterans. But the fact allowing the team to score 119, not good energy. The Knicks do match up well against the Nets. Like we said, Porzingis, Kanter, matchup problems. Even Frank Ntilikina does a good job on our long, lanky point guards. So I think that's an issue. But the fact they just didn't play with the energy or the focus, it seems like the Knicks actually respect, that it's somewhat, the Nets and, it's New York and we're trying to get this win for the city. But the Nets just don't seem to care. And the Knicks have a little bit more energy and they have the better matchup. So they're going to win every time unless the Nets do something about it.
Yeah, and it's almost like we were highly anticipating on the previous pod, Nick. We were hoping for the W, but yeah, the energy just wasn't there. We couldn't seep off the energy off to our boys. But to make a guy like a Trey Burke almost play him into form, the wannabe Allen Iverson, as I tweeted out, that with those cornrows, he looked good. I'm not gonna knock it. If you can do it, do it because our boy Rondé's been rocking the dreads and even Jeremy Lin earlier in the year. But yeah, it was just one of those games that was a bit disappointing. It was almost emblematic of that first Knicks game. We just had no energy on either end of the floor. And their talent was just too much for us. Porzingis, Burke, all these guys just had a field day against us. And we just couldn't keep up with them, couldn't make our own baskets. And yeah, our defense has been very up and down, despite the fact that it's just under the top half of the league. We can concede in very heavy bunches.
Yeah, and you mentioned Porzingis being an issue. He's been an issue in all the games, even the game he got injured in, they still won too. But the fact is, he shot 8 of 14, 2 of 3 from 3, 9 rebounds. He had a really big impact on the game. At some point, I'm pro Kenny Atkinson, but I think at some point he has to do a better job of dealing with these superstars when we don't have a player that can match up. Rondé's great. He does a good defensive job on a lot of players in the league. But against someone 7-3 when he's 6-7, he's going to get beat every night. Literally, there's probably not a guy in the Nets roster that can really match up with Porzingis. Maybe Jared Allen 5 years down the road. But right now, they need to adjust as a team, I think, to stop somebody like Porzingis.
Yeah, and we've seen as well that Porzingis not necessarily struggles in the double team, but I put a tweet out earlier in the day that, he's notoriously a non-passer. He's averaging like barely an assist a game. You get those doubles on him, whether it's from the perimeter or a guy down low, you put a Rondé and a Damari on him, then it's going to force, maybe some turnovers or at least force the switch because, you'd rather have the guys outside of the star players beat you. You'd rather have Doug McDermott, Courtney Lee, Michael Beasley. You'd rather those guys beat you. If they can put up 20 points each, 15 points each, then I'll take that. But if it's Kristaps Porzingis, like, you know, getting easy buckets, like you mentioned, Nick, those percentages are just way too good. And he's not a notoriously good rebounder either. He has the size and everything, but he doesn't like getting down low and bruising down low. But because he has such, you know, even against us, he has such, you know, weights and physicality, it's just going to be a nightmare matchup for us for years to come.
Yeah, honestly, it really is. And unless they make some type of adjustment where they throw a double team, like you said, I think, you know, I've watched a decent amount of Knicks games this year. I think the Chicago Bulls have done a good job against the Knicks, and a lot of that is because they've dealt with Porzingis the right way. So I think that's what we need to see, an adjustment now. Because like you said, Porzingis isn't going anywhere most likely. We're going to have to deal with him for the next 10 years. So we need to come up with some type of strategy to beat him and make the other guys beat you. When you have a guy like Jarrett Jack on the floor, you know, I'm surprised more teams haven't done this, but he's not a great three-point shooter. He's not a great shooter unless he's hot. So kind of, you know, sink off of him and help on his guy, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's just about having the nous and the knowledge to do so. There was an article on Nets Daily earlier in the week about the fact that what happens in the film room for the Nets and how it can be a bit uncomfortable, a bit confronting, but necessary. I think that those are going to have to be continuing throughout the season because we're making the same mistakes, it seems. You know, the same matchup earlier in the year, same mistakes against Porzingis, all these guys. You know, Jarrett Jack, this is a guy that played for us. This is a guy we should know inside and out. Yes, we're a completely new team, but, you know, he's been at Barclays. He knows what it's like. He likes those little, you know, those little teardrops, those little dinkers and dumpers from about 10 to 15 feet, even 5 feet, you know. Sag off him, like you mentioned there. Then, you know, forced to double team. It's just a little bit frustrating. But at the same time, hopefully we can learn from it. And at least we brought in some form into the Spurs game. Unfortunately, it was a loss, though.
Yeah. One more point before we get to the Spurs. You mentioned the lack of focus and the same mistakes. I hate to keep hitting on the guy, but Alan Crabb in that game, there was probably three times where he got beat on either a backdoor cut or just a normal cut by Mick Buckets. And, you know, yeah. Mick Buckets is a pretty good player, but he's nothing crazy. Alan Crabb, you want to be a starter in the NBA. Mick Buckets is probably never going to be a starter. You can't even defend him. Courtney Lee was losing him on screens like it was nothing. We'll talk more Alan Crabb in a bit. But let's go to the Spurs game. You know, this game, it was tough because the Nets were in it, and then they weren't in it, and then all of a sudden they made a run at the end, and then to lose by 5 points again at home sucks. But, you know, at least they made a comeback.
Yeah, and it seems like like we mentioned, I think I literally used this analogy before, but I'll use it again. The Nets continue to dig themselves holes. And you can't do that against a team like whether it's a Toronto Raptors or a Washington Wizards or a Boston Celtics or a San Antonio Spurs. San Antonio Spurs are one of the class organizations in the NBA today. Guys like LaMarcus Aldridge, Patty Mills, Pau Gasol, they're seasoned veterans. They know how to get the wins. They know how to get the Ws. They know how to get the buckets. Patty Mills, shout out to the big Aussie. Shout out to the Aboriginal. He's absolutely having a great season. In the absence of a guy like a Tony Parker, he stepped up. DeJounte Murray has had his moments, but, you know, Patty just knows how to get a bucket. He knows how to hit the three. And him and LaMarcus had a nice little chemistry, unfortunately, as Net fans. And LaMarcus, again, just those big guys, they dominate against us. And LaMarcus is just playing all-star level basketball this year. If he's not a starter, I'd be very surprised.
Yeah, he might get announced as starters are going to be announced tonight. But two notes I had on the Spurs, because I knew we weren't going to talk about it too much. Patty Mills and LaMarcus Aldridge. So you hit it right on the head. I thought, though, that, you know, Patty Mills is a great player, but I think the Nets did a bad job. Not like you kind of hinted at it the previous portion. You know, they don't know the scouting report. You know, Mills isn't going to kill you inside. He's not going to kill you. He's going to kill you at the three-point line. And losing him, especially when there's other guys on the floor that can't shoot, that's always been my problem with the Nets sometimes. They help off of guys that can shoot, and the guys that can't shoot, they don't help off of. So it's just like, you know, you need to do your homework.
Yeah, it seems like the scouting report, like you mentioned there, and I think whether it's a chemistry issue, whether it's a communication issue, you know,
communication's a big thing, Jack. You hit it right on the head. That's an issue.
Yeah, I think because, you know, the moments where Damari Carroll's out there, we generally look quite solid. You know, he's our leader, so to speak. Alan Crabb has been playing okay defensively, but it's almost individual defense. It's not in the way of, you know, helping the team schemes, yep. The defensive schemes. Whereas we sort of, you know, Spencer Dinwiddie has become a great leader for us, but we're still very young. We're still one of the youngest squads in the NBA. So those baby steps are going to happen. But, you know, we can't the basic things of like forcing a guy like Patty to take a long two or forcing him inside, you know, and getting close up to him on the perimeter. Basic sort of things that most guys will know. Patty Mills has been in the NBA for almost 10 years, if not longer. LaMarcus Aldridge, you know where he likes his spots. He's developed a little bit of range. You know, he's developed a nice little 1-2 game with Pau Gasol. It seems like we're getting beaten by things we know that are going to happen. It's just that we can't execute. So it's probably down to those two things, probably execution and communication.
Yeah, and I think the fact that is also, you know, you and I watching the season, we're seeing things, you know, happen that are happen commonly. Like, you know, Aldridge loves the ball in the spot. Mills likes to shoot threes here. Other teams are seeing that for the Nets and adjusting to the Nets and disrupting their offense, but the Nets aren't adjusting and disrupting the other team's offense. And I think that's an issue right now.
It is. And I think that's in part due to a lack of maturity. I think that it's an element of coaching. I think, you know, Coach Kenny has done a fantastic job for us, but if he can't get the guys executing what he wants, then there has to be an element of that is put on him. It's not obviously not all on him. I think the coaches take far too much of the blame, but there is an element that goes to it. But at the end of the day, it is the players who have to go out there and execute what they're supposed to be doing. You know, getting back into the film room, getting back into practice, knowing who your opponent is, knowing what they like to do. We know the Spurs aren't a notorious three-point shooting team. You know, they like to slow things down. They're almost an antithesis to what the Nets are. They like to sort of, you know, the pace is slowed down. So the Nets want to get out in transition, but the Pacers are just experts at getting the game on their own terms. So we had our own runs. We got down at stages, but at the end of the day, we can't keep getting down against these great teams because we're not going to win many games doing that.
Exactly. And I think what makes it frustrating is all these small mistakes you see through the game, like you said, you know, the things that are constantly happening, to see them happen all the time and against the good teams, like, you know, we played a better second and third quarter, we win this game, you know, at least, or we have a game-winning shot attempt. We're so just losing these close games just hurt, especially when you have all the stupid mistakes all over the place.
Yeah, the mistakes pile up, Nick, and they add up like no tomorrow. You know, the Nets are a notoriously high turnover team, and when it comes against season outfits like a Greg Popovich squad in San Antonio, they're going to make you pay. They prey on those efforts. You know, they don't get out in transition very often, but they execute well, they pass well, they play good team basketball, and they're getting a lot out of a lot of their guys. And even without Kawhi, they're one of the best teams in the NBA, whether it's at home or away. But it was good to see after the game, Coach Pop give us some credit, give the coaching staff some credit. He's an amazing, amazing icon. And to just hear him give the Nets some credit about their development, it was a nice little thing that he didn't really have to do, but it was good of him.
Yeah, I really appreciate it, obviously. And anything from Pop positive about the Nets is amazing.
Yeah.
And obviously, Sean Marks coming over from there and Kenny having kind of some ties to the Spurs organization in a way. So I think all of that, it's nice to hear. But like you said, it's also one thing, too, is the missed shots. I think a lot in the last two games, the Knicks and probably the Spurs game, they missed a ton of open threes. And I mean, like, we're not an amazing three-point team, but there's some of these shots we just have to hit, especially when guys are getting paid big bucks in their main being the three ball.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy for us to say that, you know, they're paid tens of millions of dollars to make shots. But, you know, if that's your job, then you should do it. You know, I'm a teacher. I go in to teach. If my kids can't learn their two times tables, I wouldn't have a job. If they can't make your three-point shot, then technically, you know, they should be benched or whatever you want to say. You know, there's comparisons you can make. But yeah, I think that really hurts us, Nick, because we start making those shots on the outside, then it creates a lot of space, like you mentioned on so many occasions. You know, it feeds our inside game as well. You know, it allows us to drive into the basket, draw some fouls, because we're quite good at that. Our free throw attempts is, I think it's around the top 10 last time I checked, but that might have changed. And guys like Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, you know, his three-point shooting is amazing, but we know his spots. We know his herky-jerkiness. And if he's surrounded by shooters that are making them, whether it's Crabbe, Harris, Carroll, whoever it is, Dinwiddie, then it makes the game so much easier for each other. They feed off it. But it seems like they're almost feeding off each other in a negative way in these past few games. But, you know, there's just been those moments.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point, is the fact they're not hitting the shots and it's really hurting the spacing, because now when guys are trying to drive, Like, for example, like, honestly, it feels like nobody's respecting Quincy Acey's three-point shot. He's been shooting a solid clip this season, but it just seems like they don't really care if he shoots. So that big, instead of giving them so much extra spacing, is just kind of sinking in a little bit more. Same thing with some of the other guys. Until they start consistently hitting, the only guy who's probably been consistently hitting the three ball all season is Joe Harris.
Yeah.
Other than that, like, everybody's been hot and cold. Damari's been pretty good, but he's had some cold stretches. And Dinwiddie, we're going to talk about right now, is dealing with something. Personally, I think he's really fatigued. He's playing 33 minutes a game. Most he's played all season long per month. In January, he's playing 33 a game. He hasn't topped 30 minutes a game all season long. So that's an issue. And his shooting percentages in January, 36% from the field, 25% from three.
Yeah, you look at some of his past games, Zink. So 2 from 14 from the field against the Knicks, and then 3 of 13 from the field against Spurs. So, you know, but on, you look at it on the other hand, he also had, you know, 13 assists in against the Spurs, and he's still impacting the game in ways. But the huge increase we saw in his capabilities was in his shot and his ability to just, you know, his 3-point shot. You know, his game becomes completely different when he's not nailing that. I don't think, you know, everyone has their moments. We talked about LeVert earlier in the season, how he was having his cold stretch. But yeah, these increased minutes are really hurting him. Against the Spurs last night, 35 minutes. He did only have 28 minutes against the Knicks, but he's also played over 41 minutes in OT games as well. You know, he's easily playing our most minutes, and that certainly hurts him. But I think the return of D'Lo will hopefully allow him to play a little bit more off ball, and it'll give him some more open looks, because at the end of the shot clock, when it comes down to like 5 seconds, the ball's in his hands. I think
way too much.
The percentages way too much. And I think that is affecting his percentages a little bit. We see the clock and it's like 4. So it's like, all right, let's get the ball to Spencer Dinwiddie. He'll jack something up from 30 feet. And it's a bad shot. It's like heavily contested. So I think that affects it a little bit. We can take, you know, you take what you will with the percentages, like a grain of salt, but you know, he has been cold, but I'm sure he'll get a little bit warmer when D'Lo starts to integrate himself a little bit, and it allows him to sort of play against some different units as well. He doesn't necessarily have to take on, you know, the number one guys for, you know, 20 minutes a game. He can have his spurts against the lesser units, because we saw what's happened with Caris LeVert, how he's been able to do that and how it's increased his game. You know, Spencer Dinwiddie had such a hot start. It was almost surprising in ways. So now that we're seeing this dip in form, it's almost like, well, what's he doing? But at least he's still impacting the game in terms of his passing. So there's positives and negatives.
Yeah, I think you guys still give him a lot of credit, because I don't think it's his fault that he's not shooting well. I literally think that he's fatigued. He's only 100 minutes behind from how many minutes he played all of last season. So that's a pretty big jump. You know what I mean? So that's going to impact you. And you said the three ball is a big difference. And a lot of people, you know, depending on your three-point shot, in my eyes, off the top of my head, I believe Dinwiddie uses a good amount of elevation on his three, because he has a little bit of a fade to it.
Yeah.
So obviously not having the right elevation on your jump shot is going to have an impact. And then the fact not having D'Angelo, moving in from being a backup point guard to being I guess I would call him a star point guard in a sense, because he's the guy who's doing everything offensively for the Nets at times. A lot of eyes on you all the time. Having D'Angelo back, not only will give him more rest, you know, less responsibility, but it's just going to give him an easier defense, like you said. Lesser competition, and even when he's out there, there's a good chance now he'll either be out there with D'Lo or LeVert.
Yeah, and you talked about those minutes thing, which is a great stat. He's also only missed one game.
Yeah.
He's played 43 of a possible 44 games. You know, LeVert had his time where he's missed off. We all know about D'Lo. Rondé's missed a few games. Damari Carroll's missed a few games. So there's been a lot of emphasis on Spencer, and he's played a lot. In terms of his total minutes and in terms of his games, you know, back-to-backs, it's tiresome. And for a guy who's almost finding his way still in terms of this role, we can only expect so much. So if it's only I think this is only going to be a little bit of a blip on the radar. I don't expect it to last for a very long time. There's still people talking about whether they trade him, and I've been fretting about it because doing an article for OTG Basketball, whether I put him, is it Joe Harris, is it Damari Carroll? It's almost like trying to sell one of my children, figuring it out. But Spencer, I think he's going to get back sooner rather than later. And hopefully that coincides with D'Lo, and we see a nice new partnership on the court.
Yeah, honestly, when D'Lo starts to get back into rhythm and kind of find his groove and pick up the minutes, I would not be surprised if the Nets decided to give Dinwiddie a night off. He could use a night of rest. He's also, one thing we didn't mention too, he's not the biggest dude, and he does get banged around a lot in the paint. He doesn't always get the foul call, but he still goes in there, and it's just a lot. He just does a lot on the Nets team, not only offensively, you know, setting up the offense, getting the ball late in the shot clock, trying to make something out of nothing, but defensively, chasing around these point guards on a daily basis is not an easy job.
He never gets the calls, Nick. Like, let's be real. He never really gets the calls. Like, we're talking about a guy who's probably our best all-round player, who gets inside, who's got a great shot. And I think it's just because he's not getting the respect. You know, he's voiced his opinions, and maybe, you know, he's shot 5 times from the line, 4 times from the line in the past 2 games. That's far more than, you know, he's seen a lot over this season. So he's generally averaging like 3, 3.5. So maybe he's starting to get the kudos he finally deserves. Maybe they're finally seeing that they're adding him on the NBA Twitter page. But I think if he continues to show his aggression, continues to play his own game, maintain his composure, it comes. You know, basketball is a game of confidence. It's a game of plays, and it's a game of runs. You know, there's going to be up and down moments. It's about staying level-headed and, you know, just keeping your head screwed on. And he's a very composed guy. Now, he's probably our most composed player in terms of his mindset on our roster. You know, he's a guy that I think he just runs things for us. And we've sort of, you know, taken on his personality a little bit. And I think that comes a little bit from our coach Kenny and even the front office with Sean Marks as well. So I think Spencer's going to be okay, but I think he's going to be spending a little bit of time in the film room, just seeing where it's going wrong. Is it the types of shots he's taking? Is it when the shots are being taken? Is it the position? You know, there's probably plenty of things that he knows and the coaching staff knows that we don't. But I've got all the confidence in the world that it'll be back.
Yeah, I agree. And I think in less minutes, it'll help him. It'll help him get his focus back, because sometimes I think it's just a lot of pressure in general. So getting him back 100% and not fatigued will definitely help the Nets. But like you said, not getting the calls. One thing I'd like to see Dinwiddie do is just stop complaining a little bit. You know, whatever. They're not going to give you the calls. Just start going to the paint mad hard. Like, you just start attacking the rim. So that either they're not going to give you the call or they're going to have to call an offensive foul on you. Then it's just going to draw more attention to the play. And then, you know, it's going to create things out of that. I think what I'll say about him is he complains a little bit too much once in a while on plays that are 50-50. You're not going to get all the calls, especially when you're, you know, not a well-known NBA player. So after a year, kind of get in there and then maybe start chirping a little bit. I think when you only say things once in a while, it helps your case a lot more.
Yeah, and I think it's 538 that did an article last year on the players who complain the most to the refs, and it's notoriously the best players. It's, yeah, LeBron James, it's Draymond Green, it's James Harden, it's Blake Russell Griffin. Westbrook, Blake Griffin. It's those guys that like to chirp. I think Spencer is still earning his keep as terms of putting himself in that elite status, and to be able to still sort of maintain his level-headedness. He's always going to have that. That's one of his outstanding traits. But at the same time, you know, he's also running it. And he's running the floor for us. He's, you know, our number one floor general. And you mentioned his shooting, Nick. I think if he can get those easy buckets at the line, you know, draw the contact, because he's really good at that. And, you know, he's probably one of our best, you know, finishers around the rim. And I think, you know, as well, that adds to the spacing. Because easy buckets always help. And I think Alan Crabb can learn a thing or two from that as well.
Well, that is actually the perfect segue, because that's what we're talking about right now. Alan Crabb. We talked about him on the midseason grade one. You know, he's been hot and cold. He got a C+. But honestly, I just feel like the last few games, he's really just been annoying the shit out of me. I messaged you that the other day. You know, Crabb's, and I think he's annoying me so much because I expected so much more. I expected more of an improvement. Currently shooting 38% from the field, 36% from three. He's only seen his points per game go up slightly. Same things with his assists. The only thing he's really improved a lot in is rebounding, which is just kind of the team not having rebounders. So what are your thoughts on the play of Alan Crabb?
I saw this stat the other day, Nick, where Alan Crabb scores 20 points or more. The Nets are 1-5. So Alan Crabb isn't having an impact on the team's success. It almost like when the team is down, Alan Crabb is up. And when the team is up, Alan Crabb's average or worse. So, and that's not what we want from a guy we're paying $19 million to. well, if you discount Nicholson's salary, 12.5, whatever you want to call it. But I think, you know, we talked about his defensive capabilities increasing. Yeah, that's all well and good, but I'd rather have an incredibly capable offensive perimeter threat who's a trash, like a guy like a Kyle Korver. And then a guy compared to, say, you know, a 3 and D who can sort of make a 3 every now and then. And it's almost like Alan Crabb's neither. You know, he's not a great shooter. He's not a great defender. He's average at both right now. And he's not impacting the team in a positive manner when we need him to. The rebounding you mentioned there, Nick, that's a team scheme. You know, all our wings are sort of, will always be sort of our top rebounders. Like Rondé's been generally one of our top rebounders. Damari, Alan Crabb gets his boards every now and then. But I'd rather see him light it up, get 6 threes. I want him to just jack it up. I want him to, like, literally just be aggressive. I think that's one of the things he can be much more of. He's been quite tentative, quite timid. And I think most players, whenever you talk to them about what's the key to their success, you know, listening to a pod the other day with Ish Smith on Howard Beck's podcast, the advice he got from Russell Westbrook, just be aggressive. Be aggressive. And that's what you hear so many players say about, you know, getting better in their game and getting better in their mentality. It seems that Alan Crabb doesn't have the aggressiveness that's required. And aggressiveness doesn't mean throwing haymakers like Aaron Aflalo. It just means, you know, getting to the line a little bit more, showing a little bit of grunt, showing a little bit of grit. We want him to sort of, we want him to do the best because we see the potential. And the potential hopefully will come to fruition, you know, by the end of the season, and if not the start of next season. But it's just very frustrating.
Yeah, it definitely is. It's frustrating, like you said. It's just like, you know, be good consistently at one thing. Like, sometimes he's a great three-point shooter. Sometimes he does a decent job driving to the rim. Sometimes he plays good defense. Other times he can't hit a three. Other times he looks indecisive in that mid-range games and just takes bad shots. Sometimes he just loses focus completely on defense and lets a cutter get easy buckets, or he just kind of forgets to defend somebody. Like you said, he's getting paid way too much not to be great at something, and I think the Nets were hoping he would really improve in an area. And you hit it on the head, playing aggressive and playing free. You know, I think that's an issue for him, because sometimes he'll get the ball at the three-point line and he won't initially shoot it. He'll wait a second and then he'll end up taking a shot that's not as good as the first attempt he had. So it's like, Just make a decisive decision.
Decisive, get the ball,
get to the ball, cut to the rim. You know, if you got to open three, shoot to open three. And also, I think another thing he does is, like, he might be having an off night. And instead of, like, you know, trying to get an open shot or, you know, something close to the rim, he'll shoot like a contested three over somebody who's, like, a solid defender. Like, there's a good chance you're not going to hit that as your first shot of the game.
Yeah, I think his assists as well, Nick. You know, his numbers, I'm looking at him right now, his game log. I don't think he's had more than 3 assists this season. In fact, he hasn't. And that's, you know, for a shooting guard, I mean, yes, like, he's not Kobe by any stretch. But at the same time, you know, you're either going to be a flat-out scorer or you want to see some, you know, passing that will lead everything. You want to see, some more all-round game. But I think Alan Crabb's almost, he either forces it too much or he doesn't force it enough. There's no middle ground. Yeah, there's like a spectrum. Like, I'm not going to invent something because I already have something stupid for my own podcast that I don't. So I think he needs to sort of find that balance. And I mean, it's hard. We're saying for him to be aggressive and to be more decisive, but also to have that balance. You know, there's so many things that, you know, require you to be a competent basketball player. It's not an easy thing by any stretch. And yes, the contract is probably weighing on him a little bit, and there's that pressure, obviously, from Nets fans. You know, the Nets' popularity has grown somewhat, and with that comes more speculation. The media's starting to give us a little bit of hype now. We're getting some more attention from, you know, guys like Zach Lowe, Jeff Van Gundy, The Ringer. So with that becomes more exposure to the wider, the casual fan. And they'll look at a guy like an Alan Crabb, like, oh yeah, he was really good at Portland. I wonder what he's doing with the Nets now. It's like, oh, he's basically doing the same thing. So I think, you know, Alan Crabb needs to find that happy medium, so to speak, you know, where you sort of got that sort of zen mode where it's just like, you know what you do and you expect it every night. Almost similar to like a Rondé Hollis-Jefferson. You know, he could learn a thing or two from Rondé. Rondé's got what he does really, really well right now this season. He still has, you know, inabilities in his game, but those are things that can be addressed. You know, Alan Crabb is by no means, you know, over the hill. He's like 25, I think barely 26 years old, if that. So he's still got a long time in this league, and that contract still has a long time to go. And I think he's going to be a big part of this Nets future, and especially a playoff push. But we just need him to be at his best.
Yeah, I think one thing you said, he could learn a lot from Rondé. Even when Rondé's not hitting his shots and, you know, sometimes playing poorly, turning over the ball, you never really question his energy. And I think I can question Allen Crabbe's energy and aggression and his focus at times. I think getting paid this money, I just want you to come locked in and play great defense and play with good energy, make the right play, be decisive. Obviously, it's a lot easier said than done, but I don't think it's too much to expect out of him because they're not asking him to drop 20 points a game. They're asking him to drop more like 16 and just do it efficiently. But right now, he's doing everything but that, and shooting under 40% of the field is just not acceptable, especially when you're getting paid that money.
Yeah, you want him to be a JJ Redick for what the Philadelphia 76ers are. You know, you've got your two best players. You know, we've got D'Lo, I guess, Caris LeVert, Rondé, or Jared Allen, whoever you want it to be. And then Allen Crabbe is just that perfect third guy. A guy who's on, you know, the contract of like an Otto Porter, you know, a little bit less, you know, a guy we could have had, or a KCP sort of contract. But he's not doing enough to sort of warrant his status right now in today's NBA. I think his shot will come. You know, he's got the mechanics there. If I'm going to anyone, it's him and Joe Harris right now. They're still, for me, the best shooters on our squad. And yes, he might take the wrong shots, but he can make the wrong shots the right shots with some of his shot making. He's still a very competent player, but I think he's just having his woes similar to the team. I hope he can find his way. And you mentioned in earlier pods, Nick, the fact that he missed time in training camp. I think that's certainly had an effect on him. Maybe not due to conditioning, because he's not playing ridiculous minutes, ridiculous loads. But, you know, it certainly have an effect on in terms of maybe his comfort level, his confidence. But I think, you know, with confidence and with making maybe these 25-point games will give him the confidence to sort of go into, okay, well, I can do this against this team. Maybe I can do it against the next team. Against a team like the Spurs, that's going to give you all the confidence in the world. And with D'Lo coming back, hopefully that opens up some space for him, similar to a Spencer Dinwiddie. You know, you have those three guys out there on the perimeter, there's going to be an open shot for one of them. And all three of them are really good shooters. You know, if anything, right now, D'Angelo Russell's probably the worst three-point shooter out of those three. Maybe not percentage-wise, but I would probably give it to Allen, then Spencer, and then D'Lo for a three-point shot. So I think we're seeing some really positive signs with the return of D'Lo. Hopefully it comes to fruition.
Yeah, and I think another thing would be it's likely that Crabbe goes to the bench. And his time off the bench, he's looked a little bit more confident against, you know, the bench competition. Maybe that's something he'll kind of do better in, or maybe having the fact he'll have two playmakers if it's a D'Lo Dinwiddie starting lineup to kind of set him up. It's interesting to see what the Nets do with that. But quick question. It's a little bit negative, but, you know, I got to ask it. Is trading for Allen Crabbe Sean Marks' worst move so far?
Probably. Yeah, I think it's one that you wouldn't say you'd want a mulligan on. But it's one that's certainly worth pondering over and reflecting over. You know, we've sung the praises of Sean Marks to no end, and he deserves a lot of them. It's just that I think Ben Falk of Cleaning the Glass wrote a really good piece on just, and he was obviously a former front office guy with Portland, being able to reflect on your mistakes and even your successes and not getting too hung up in the moment. I think Sean Marks would probably go, yeah, I guess this was a guy that we wanted at the same time. So I think they sort of saw it in a way to just sort of just get their guy. If there had been a pick attached, then we'd probably be speaking about this differently, whether it's a late first rounder or even an early second rounder. We might be saying, well, look, at least we got that first or second rounder. We got another asset to it. But the fact that we couldn't really get any assets as well, I think it's because that the Nets and Sean Marks were so all in on Allen Crabbe. I think if Allen Crabbe is having a better season as well. So there's plenty of what-ifs. We love that what-if game, Nick. But yes. I think, yeah, Sean Marks, it's probably his worst move. But I hope there's plenty of ones that are good as well.
Yeah, and there's plenty of time for this move to turn into a good one. You know, you hinted at the training camp thing, and I think that could be an issue and maybe another year in the system and a better fit. I think also it's just like Crabbe, it's just he has to kind of find himself in the Nets, you know, organization in the system, the role they want him in. And I think he doesn't really know, and the Nets don't really know how good he can be. And I think he's just confused, and the pressure's all on him. So hopefully it turns into a great move. But like you said, even if we got an early second-round pick with it, more bearable. Just the number. The number hurts because, you know, he's on contract for this year. He's on contract for next year. And then I believe the year after that, he has a player option. He's most likely going to take the option and stay on the contract, which is around $19, $20 million. And the Nets at that time probably could use the money in cap space to, you know, go after a big name if they wanted to at that time. So that's the only thing that really hurts. Right now, it doesn't really matter because who are they going to give the cap to anyways? But in a few years, it could come back to bite them.
And you'd hope by that stage, Nick, Allen Crabbe would probably have developed into that really solid third role. You know, by that stage, you know, Jared Allen would be hopefully like a Clint Capella type. You know, he'd have the same sort of level of experience. D'Lo would hopefully be our dude. You know, Caris LeVert might be the number two. Spencer Dinwiddie might still be kicking around. So I think by that time, Allen Crabbe should and hopefully will have found his role. And maybe the money won't seem as bad. And we all know how much the salary cap can fluctuate a little bit. So it might turn into a good move.
Yeah, actually. And that's another great point is, you know, at the salary cap could still take another jump. I don't think it's going to take another drastic jump like we saw the year that Allen Crabbe signed the contract. But with the NBA growing so much internationally, it is a real possibility. But let's get to the fun segment. I know that you've been waiting for this all day. We've been waiting for this for months. D'Angelo Russell is probable for Friday's game against the Miami Heat. What are your thoughts, Jack?
Nick, I was chatting to you before the pod, and I said that, you know, scrolling my feed on Instagram, and I saw this just fan page for D'Angelo Russell. It's like, D'Angelo's back tomorrow. And I'm like, okay, I'll take that with a grain of salt because, you know, there's no sources. There are no Nets Daily, Anthony Puccio, Woj. I'm just like, okay, this is an Instagram page that's dedicated to him. They probably have no idea. So then, you know, 2 hours later, literally as you get home, literally as I'm scrolling on Twitter, you know, as you do, there's all our Nets beat writers tweeting about it, probable and caps lock. And I'm just like, okay, well, I guess that I should start following that Instagram page because they're on the money. It's awesome. We've been waiting for this. It's been all over 2 months now. He's been building. He's 3-on-3 practice, he's 5-on-5 practice, and now he's ready. And I think coming against the Miami Heat, it's an important game for us. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how many minutes he plays. How many do you think he'll play? Will it be 20? Will it be 30? Will it be 15? Does he start? What's his role?
Honestly, I'm going to guess 24 minutes. I think they're going to ease him in. It's a knee injury. I think he's pretty well conditioned, though. Like, they mentioned it on the Nets broadcast. I was only half listening at the time. I was probably recording a clip or something. And they mentioned how he was saying how he felt like he was in good shape because he was working on the other aspects of his body, just not his legs. So I think the Nets, obviously, taking 9 weeks, if this was a player and the Nets were really in a big season and they wanted to get, like, a first seed or something, I think D'Lo probably would have came back a week ago and ease him in so much. I think they're really going to ease him in, I say, probably 24 minutes for a week or two. Then he'll get back to his normal stuff, and then we'll start to see him a lot more in February. But I think they'll be definitely really slow with him. I think, in my opinion, when you bring a guy back from injury like that, it takes a lot of pressure off of him when you bring him off the bench. So I wouldn't start him, and I bring him off the bench so he can kind of get really eased into the role and also face some lesser competition.
Yeah, it certainly gives you that confidence. You know, coming up against a Goran Dragic and a really hot Miami team who are now top four and are certainly absolutely flying out in the East. So, you know, they're certainly a different Miami team to the one that we had a heavy win over, you know, just a few weeks ago. You know, they've been absolutely balling, and we're going to have to be on our game. And yeah, I do like him coming off the bench. You know, it'd be really fun to see him and your boy Caris LeVert play some minutes together. And even just to be able to stagger some minutes for Spencer as well, give him some extra breathing time. Now having three competent ball handlers, it's going to be exciting. And even 24 minutes, you know, that takes off 5 minutes with Spencer Dinwiddie, takes off 5 minutes with Caris LeVert. The energy, you know, that's one thing that we can't not expect. Those guys always do have great energy, but, you know, they can now go full tilt and hopefully get some really good open looks.
Yeah, and I think this is going to see, I think Nick's that first game, I think he loses all of his minutes, so the rotation's definitely a little bit tighter now, and D'Angelo coming back, and like you said, I think it's going to help Dinwiddie so much with his fatigue. I also think LeVert at times, we know LeVert's not necessarily a true point guard. He said on the Ryan Rucco podcast that he's always played point guard, he's liked it, but I think him in like that combo guard role, all these guys can kind of play that combo guard role, and it takes a lot of pressure off all of them when they're on the floor together. Happens and
yeah, I think.
Go ahead, Jack.
No, sorry, man. I think you made a good point about the combo guard thing, Nick. I think there's, you know, the days of the true point guard, the Chris Paul, are basically over. You need to have so much versatility to your game, whether it's, you know, like a Damian Lillard. I think John Wall is probably the closest thing to it that we've got right now. But, you know, I'd much rather have guys who can do so many different things, you know, whether it's on the defensive end, the offensive end, make shots, be able to drive, have some extra length. All those guys, you know, you mentioned D'Lo, Spencer, and Karras, they're all like 6'4", 6'5", to 6'7". You know, that's great length to have. And, you know, it allows them to see the floor in a really positive manner as well. They're by no means a Ben Simmons or a Giannis or a LeBron, but it certainly gives them that little bit of an edge coming up against guys like Isaiah Thomas, Kemba Walker, Damian Lillard. And we've seen that before already with D'Lo's huge performance against Portland. I think, again, Goran Dragic is a little bit smaller as well. He's by no means short or he's an absolute vet and absolutely killing it this year. And low-key is one of the best point guards and probably most underrated point guards in the league. But I think, you know, to be able to throw so many different bodies at him is going to be a positive thing. And hopefully that might tire him out a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. And I think I'm just like envisioning in my head, you know, a starting lineup in the future with a D'Angelo Russell and a Caris LeVert. Both those guys get in the gym and they get their three-point percentage up to that high 30s, close to 40. Really difficult defense because they both can break you down off the dribble. They can pass the ball. So that could be a really positive for the Nets if they can develop these guys into lockdown three-point shooters. Kind of like, you know, we mentioned Dinwiddie kind of slacking right now in his three-point shot, but early in the season, he was shooting a high percentage. He was shooting a lot tougher shots that we haven't seen before. If they can kind of get LeVert and D'Angelo on that same routine and get their three-point up to that level, I think the Nets are going to be set for the backcourt.
I think it just helps, Nick, just having depth. The depth of talent, you know, most teams are rarely healthy consistently throughout the season, but it seems the Nets are a team that always are hampered by injuries and always our top guys. It's never the guys, you know, number 12, 13 on the roster. It's always, you know, your best guy, your second best guy, your point guard, you know, your small forward, your center. But for us to actually have a depth of talent, you know, we've got four quality point guards on the roster, counting if you want to count all of them. Now that, you know, Caris LeVert has proven himself, you know, in this time that D'Angelo's been out. And it's been a godsend, and hopefully it just adds so much versatility to our game. It adds, you know, offense, defense, you know, there are so many different lineups and chemistry. You know, there's just the possibilities are endless.
Yeah, and it gives Kenny a lot of tools. And talking about the Miami Heat, is that that's something Eric Spoelstra does well. You know, he has a lot of different tools on his roster. He does a great job mixing and matching, and that's just another toy for, you know, Kenny to play with in the future when he has all these guards. So let's get your stat line for D'Lo on Friday night before we get out of here.
Oh, this is gonna be a tricky one, Nick. I reckon he gets 15-5-5-5.
Wow.
I think... You know, it maybe the rebounds, you can drop that down to a three. But, you know, D'Lo likes to have the ball in his hands a lot. You know, his usage rate was quite big, quite high when he was playing with the team. And even with his minutes on the floor, he's going to want to have the ball in his hand just to get that feel back. So even if he's only on the floor for 24 minutes, if he's playing alongside a Karras or a Spencer, expect the ball to be in his hands for large chunks of the time. If he's... gets anywhere over 20 minutes, I'm not putting the pass in the fact he's getting the double digits. It's just whether he can nail his three-point shot and whether he can get some easy buckets going to the line because, you know, if you can get some easy buckets going to the line, draw some contact, you know, those are some bonus points for him because we know he's a great jump shooter. So, I think there's a stat line. What do you think he's got, Nick?
All right, I'm going to go. I'm going to give you a real detailed one, Jack. 11 points. 4-9 from the field, 3 2-pointers, 1-3, 2 free throws. I'm going to give him 3 assists, 2 rebounds, 2 turnovers, 1 steal.
Damn. Those 2 turnovers I like as well. Not too many.
Yeah. I think I'll have him because obviously being rusty and he kind of does throw risky passes here and there. But, you know, hopefully I'm spot on. Maybe I can get like some lotto tickets or something.
Yeah, you should do that. I think they do like the Beat of Brooklyn or one of the Brooklyn fan pages where you like guess the stat line of a player or the team and you win like some merch or something like that. I think you should get on it, mate. I reckon, you know, you're a very savvy fellow when it comes to these things.
So, I mean, the most important thing though, Jack, is it comes in a W because definitely. We need one right now. All these close losses, and actually one more question before we get out of here. If we had D'Angelo for the whole month of January, how many wins would the Nets have?
Well, certainly.
Actually, I'll ask you this. How many of these games would the Nets have won against the Celtics, Raptors, and Spurs? Out of those three games, how many do they win if they have D'Lo?
I reckon one at least. I think the talent of those three teams, they are the best Eastern Conference teams, some of the best teams in the NBA right now. I think we get at least one of them, maybe two. It's tough to say whether you get the third because, you know, there's times where, you know, he might take shots from Spencer Dinwiddie. And, you know, when Spencer Dinwiddie's having one of his hot nights, it's hard to say. So I think there's certainly we get one or two of them. But, you know, if we had D'Lo, it's tough to say because his talent level is so high.
Yeah, I think we definitely beat the Raptors in overtime because I just think we needed a score in that game so bad, especially in overtime. We just had no juice. And then the Spurs and the Boston game are still a toss-up. In my mind, you know, Boston game was still really close with the foul calls. But like you said, D'Angelo's taking shots away from maybe LeVert or Dinwiddie. Also, his defense isn't at the same level as those two. So it kind of bounces out, but we definitely need that shot maker, that creator, somebody who can just break up these runs. And that's been an issue. Even again, that Spurs game, I think the Spurs at some point were on a 17-4 run between the first and second quarter. Like the Nets just need to do a better job of breaking up these runs. And that's something D'Lo can do. And maybe it's something Okafor can do. And that's for another pod. But Jack, great pod as always. Thank everybody for listening. You can always check out the Brooklyn Buzz on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, and OTGBasketball.com.
It's time, baby. D'Lo's back.